Today on the Inside Flap.
I find that as an author, the just being by yourself all the time and in your own head, you know, it's fun, but it's not all that healthy either. I just thought it would be really funny if I put an extra X on my name. So I would be like these pretentious marketing twerps. It didn't really occur to me until I saw the book on the shelf that, you know, when people see it for the first time, right, they've got no way of getting the joke.
No.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my left is...
Didn't think you were going to make it.
Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. We are here with you for another midweek edition of the Inside Flap Podcast, or what we like to call
the Inside
Chat. The Inside Chat. That's right. We have a very special guest today. Max Berry will be joining us. I talked to Max early this morning. For him, I think it was, he said it was 7:30 my time here, Denver, Littleton time, AM. And according to him, it was 12:30 his time. I didn't get clarification. He was in Australia, but I believe
12:30 a.m., right?
It was, when I did a little Googling, did a little research, did a little time test.
I don't know why, but the time is one of the harder... All right.
It's so hard to figure out.
This is kind of weird, because like running a book podcast, there's not a lot that's hard. Like, we do read kind of what we want. We have the wonderful... We get to... interview and talk with people that we admire, and it's fantastic. But the only hard part is when you go to set up a podcast interview.
Yeah.
The writers never live in mountain time. No one lives in mountain time. No one knows what mountain time is.
The one guy who had a house in mountain time was Chris Sorensen, and he was on the East Coast when we talked to him. So it never works out.
No, and it's confusing.
It's so confusing. We missed an interview once, but we were able to circle back to that one. We won't talk about that one.
No,
but
we will not talk about
I do
that.
Love that book, Those People, by Louise Kendall. That was such a good book. I said, listen.
She was in England. Greenwich Central Time.
That was a whole nother.
I don't even know.
Anyway, we'll have that chat with Max Berry for you in just a little bit. He's got a new book out. It's called Providence, and I'll talk about that in a second. It is really good. But Laura, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good today. Beautiful weather in Denver, Colorado.
Gorgeous weather.
So much.
Yes.
When it's not sunny for like a day, my mood is just despondent.
Sour disposition.
Yeah. And I just feel like this pandemic will never end.
Right.
I'll never get to, I don't even know what I want to do, but I don't want to be inside the home anymore. I don't want to have to walk in the neighborhood anymore. I'm just tired of it all. But today, Dave.
Yes, today
is different.
Today is a good day.
Well, one funny thing. So last night, like 12:30 in the morning, we were woken up to,
this was
I don't
ridiculous.
Think a siren. I think no, it was just happened, flashing police lights.
Our lights, the inside of our walls, the white walls suddenly turned a flashing red and blue.
Yeah.
Like literally all four walls were glowing red and blue.
It was crazy bright.
What the hell is going on? Well, opened up the part of the curtains and looked outside. There's ambulances, fire trucks, police cars up and down the street.
And another weird thing, our dogs always bark.
Yes.
If you're a good listener of the podcast, you'll probably hear Nelson and Charlie barking in the background.
On every show, pretty much.
They didn't bark.
No!
They were sleeping peacefully on the sofa. They're like, what's the problem?
House full of emergency or street full of emergency vehicles.
But
not a peep.
This is the weird thing.
Yeah.
If you hadn't been with me, and I would have woken up in the morning and thought I hallucinated because we couldn't tell what was going on.
Right.
It's a rental house, so we don't know that person who lives there.
No, there were some firefighters who scurried in through the side gate, but there were no lights on in the house and on the corner of the street that we watched.
Multiple ambulances there, no smoke. You know what? If you also have been listening, I did see a house fire in the fall.
Right.
Which was kind of strange. But this is the second time, Dave, this has happened where we, you and I have woken up because our bedroom faces the front street.
Yeah.
And seen police action in on our little tiny street in beautiful old town Littleton.
Yeah, it's a mystery. I have no idea.
And none of our neighbors ever seem to know. Sorry, the cat's on my microphone now.
Yeah, speaking of our pets.
But none of our neighbors know. And then you wake up in the morning and everyone's like, no, nothing happened. You're like, was I imagining this?
It's bizarre. Did you get to question any of our neighbors about it?
No,
did
I haven't. See anybody? I guarantee you they didn't see anything, though. I think we're the only ones who I think sleep in the front.
I don't think it was a burglary because I didn't see any cop with the little notepad writing anything.
Well, that house has been burgled before.
It has been burgled.
Because I have seen that, mm-hmm. and that I saw that was with all the floodlights were on, the cat.
The fact that we saw three or four firefighters scurrying in there.
I didn't realize there were firefighters.
You know what? I just thought maybe it was a gas leak or something.
Huh. That could have been.
Could have been a gas leak.
But that would be XL Energy because...
You know, everybody's eating a lot of beans this time of
we've had a gas leak before,
so
though.
It could be a gas leak.
In our neighborhood, by the way, because I actually had to call.
Yeah. That is true. We did have to call because you could
smell
that
gas. So we had some weird, like, as far as I know, non-pandemic related emergency on our street.
Yeah. I had a very exciting day. I got to clean out my closet. Now, the interesting thing with that was I got just
times.
So many clothes just packed up and stacked up and piled up, my little shelving unit there. I was like, well, this is ridiculous. Let me take a few well-renowned for my fashion sense. Yeah, all the ladies will tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
What I noticed was because I was taking all my old clothes out and redistributed them in piles and putting them back on the shelves, and I noticed that. So I created a new stack, and these are my work because a lot of work that needs to be done around the house and outside. You don't want to mess up your nice t-shirt.
We live in a really old house.
Yeah, and we did old house and new yard work that was done. So all kinds of stuff that needs to be done in the yard, the garage, wiring, kinds of insulation work.
It's a 90-year-old home.
Yeah, every time you turn around, something else, caulking needs to be done. Messy stuff.
Yeah.
So, asbestos, all kinds of stuff. Well, not like I'm saving any clothes that I use for asbestos removal. I mean, and if any home inspectors are listening, we definitely did not do any asbestos tiling removal at all.
No.
That did not happen.
Not at all.
Now, that's the pandemic alert. That's no other kind of alert. Anyway, I'm putting it in piles of clean clothes, t-shirts, and I create a new pile of work clothes. And what I'm realizing in the 6 months or however long that all these clothes have been packed up or I've tossed them in there, I don't know, I'm getting sloppier or messier or something, but I'm accruing more and more, quote, work shirts, which are, shirts that I'm not going to wear out in public, but I'm happy to. I don't know what's going on. But
good for you. You don't have to be seen out in public anymore.
No, that is the nice thing.
Yeah.
But I've got lesser and lesser shirts now
Is that proper?
Less and less shirts now in which to walk out in public wearing.
That's
so,
kind of funny.
that was my day today. Along with reading a great book that we'll talk about in a future show. But anyway, not here to talk about that. We're here to chat with the delightful Max Berry. Talked to him this morning. Anyways, new book is called Providence. Now, Providence is an actual name of a line of spaceships. So I think in this book, it's Providence number 5. And these spaceships are designed to be run completely on artificial intelligence. Now, this is a space book. This is a war book. This is a monster book. But most of all, this is a character-driven human book, believe it or not. The book takes place, despite the fact there's like an astronaut on the cover.
I like the cover. I think the cover's really catchy.
It is a fantastic. Yeah. This is a great book cover.
I wish we had bookstores open right now because you would walk past this book and it would be like
leap into your hand. Bookstore and it would, it would thrust itself right into your palm and you'll walk right into the counter and buy a beautiful red with an astronaut who's floating in some kind of viscous liquid. I know what that is.
Oh,
but
you do?
I'm not going to give any spoilers.
Oh, so there's monsters in here?
Well, aliens. I like to call them monsters. To me, they were like kind of old school 50s monsters. They called them salamanders. But anyway, The book takes place aboard this spaceship, Providence, run completely by AI, carrying aboard four humans. Their two-year mission: to track down and destroy every single salamander it comes across. Now, salamanders are the aforementioned aliens, and what just a great, he's created this great, I talked to him about it, just this great foil that our fearless, intrepid travelers have to battle. They are six-legged creatures. And now these creatures, they do something that's called hucking, H-U-K. Mm-hmm. And what this is, it's like if they get close enough to you and they huck you, they basically spit at you. Their head splits open.
What?
And then they spit at you. But the problem is this, whatever it is, that
coronavirus spit
at you, it's even worse. It basically implodes all matter it touches. So
like acid.
Yeah, it's kind of like acid, and it just destroys everything it touches. So you got to make sure that you don't want them to get, like, even the spaceship. Like if the salamanders
metal,
get close
it would
to
metal.
It just goes right through everything, every matter, any kind of matter. Luckily, the spaceship, the AI that runs the spaceship, you know, it's perfect. They destroy, there's hives floating around in space, and the AI takes the crew to every different hive with all these salamanders, and they sit there, and the AI just punches, and the everybody who's on board pretends to be, you know, manning their stations, but really it's the AI who's just blasting all these salamanders, thousands and thousands of salamanders.
So the humans don't have a lot to do.
They have nothing to do. They have nothing to do, and that's why, that's what makes this a great character-driven book, because all the action happens in between the characters. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so this ship is an excellent killing machine. And here are your four characters. So you've got the headstrong female captain who's been there and done that, and she's writing a letter a day to her husband back on Earth. You've got the perky and sprightly, quote, life engineer. Now, her job is to make sure that the other humans aboard the ship don't go crazy. Very important job, right? Think about it. You're in this cramped quarters for 2 years.
Sure.
And in fact, they go into what's called, he calls it the violet zone, the VZ, where they can't communicate at all. They're completely shut off from any communication back home. So there's no way at all. And a lot of the book happens out in this VZ, the scary zone. So you've got her. Mm-hmm. You've got the slightly off his rocker weapons expert. You know, any weapons expert has to, I always think about, who's a guy from Vice Principals who created the show?
Danny.
What's his name? Yeah, Danny McBride.
Yeah.
His character from Tropic Thunder, who's really into weapons.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, so you got the weapons
Honestly,
expert.
Honestly, you could have named any movie with a ballistics expert.
That's
and
true, right?
Like, yeah,
always,
that guy.
They always got to be slightly off the rocker. He's he kind of passes the time by throwing, playing a game with ninja stars. He recruits the other guy, the life officer, the intelligence officer, and they throw ninja stars at each other. Listen, they get bored. There's a lot of time on their
hands. I can see that.
And this intel officer is Gilly. His name is Gilly, and he's the guy that we spend most of our time with. So we get to see everybody's viewpoint. Hmm. So this book is exciting. The world building that is done by Barry is ingenious. I was literally, as I was reading this book, I was lost in space. Some of you out there listening right now, we'll recognize this theme song, Laura. Do you know this theme song?
Did not know this.
I gave you an audio clue just a second ago when I said, while I was reading this book, I was literally lost in space.
Yeah, sorry. I know Pigs in Space.
Lost? No, it's not Pigs in Space. No, this is from literally Lost in Space is the name of the
really?
TV show. Yes, Lost in Space. Huh. Yep. So
Star
great.
Star Trek, I would have known that one.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody would have known that. I was just wanted to play a little something old.
In fact, I didn't realize Lost in Space was an actual TV show. I thought that the Muppets, they're pigs in space.
Yeah.
I thought that was a standalone from the Muppets. I didn't
Did
know they
really?
Were making fun of a show. So
that's funny. This is a book I could not put down. I was sad to see it end. It raises all kinds of fascinating questions about humanity, about war, about AI, and of course, ninja stars and how to throw them. But ultimately, this is a story about the four people on board the ship and their fears, their motivations, and their personal journeys they go through. And that's why it resonated with me. The world building enhances the story without getting in the way with too much, you know. What you don't want to see is a whole lot of technical mumbo jumbo, but you want enough mm-hmm. to make it believable.
Yeah.
And he does just a perfect job of doing that.
We don't need Neal Stephenson here.
No, it's not like, oh man, with 7 years I read that book. It's just like,
that's a lot for me.
Turn this page.
I liked the book a lot, but there was a lot that I couldn't, my art brain, I couldn't handle it.
Too much technical jumbo.
Yeah.
The monsters in this book, the salamanders, they're thrilling and ultimately terrifying, but the humans aboard drove the story, and it was great to be able to see it from each one of their viewpoints. I love this one. This turns into quite a tense, white-knuckle, and heart-bending thrill ride in the end. And I guess...
Nice. Sounds like a great show, Dave. I'm really sorry I missed it.
It was like a cult.
Nerdy white guys?
Cult classic.
Okay.
Well, listen, I guess in space, no one can hear a scream, but you know what they can hear?
What can they hear?
They can hear a huck.
So
watch
cool.
out. This is Providence by Max Berry, and it is really good. So let's get to my conversation with him. Max Berry is an Australian writer who is not only a fantastic author, but he's also a really fun guy. Listen, if you go to his website, maxberry.com, he's got all these great and funny, interesting blog posts and little short fiction pieces, as well as games he created. He sat down and spent 2 weeks doing nothing but creating a game. He writes code. And he wrote this game, this role-playing game, to go along. Yes, I was playing it this morning. It was a lot of fun to go along with this book.
Wow.
Where you get to take on the role of Gilly, and you get to make choices
and decisions. I bet he's well-suited for this stay-at-home order.
Oh, he was. We talked about that, too. You hear that in a second.
Yeah.
Listen, I just had a great time talking with Max. We talked running. We talked artificial intelligence. Huh. And we talked... What is going
on? I don't know, dude.
It's like segueing into terrible. An actual episode.
It sounds terrible.
All right, let me kill that.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Anyway, we talked. He's a runner also, so it was great that we chatted a little bit about running. We talked AI, and we also talked about what the hell happened to the extra X in his name from his first book, Syrup. So here is my chat with Max. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman. Sure, man. I was just playing your game. The game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what do you think?
It was great, man. It was a lot of fun. What a great companion piece for the novel, man. It was really cool. But I think Andrew screwed me, personally. I'm not sure.
Right.
Hard to play it again to see.
Because I was building that thing, and then it all seemed to be working fine, and I started telling people about it and tweeted about it, and then immediately all these bug reports start rolling in of things that aren't working properly. So, you know, I think it was hard at first because people would find that like the screen would just go black and they would think, oh, you know, the AI must have cut out and that's the end of the game. But no, that was just me screwing up the coding.
No, it was cool, man. That little effect there when it pulsed, you know, and the screen shook, it was cool. I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I loved your... how are you doing down there, by the way? Everything going all right? You guys hunkered in?
Yeah, we sure are. I just took the dog for a walk around the block because it's... let's see, it's 12:30 here. And yeah, obviously it's been really quiet the whole time, but I just walk through... I live quite close to the city, so it's quite built up where I am. And there are just no people at all. Mm. It's... Yeah, it feels very science fiction-y.
It's eerie, right? People around here, I'm near Denver, Colorado, and people around here still aren't getting the message. They actually had to, we live right by this park here, they had to go up to the basketball court and take down the nets. They had to like put police tape around the playground equipment. So there's still people. I think they're starting to get the message, but they're by and large still trying as much as they can to get together with other people. I don't know what it's going
to
take.
Yeah, well, they had to close the beaches here because people, you know, the sun came out and people did what people do and headed to the beach. But, you know, it's, in a way, like, it's not surprising because it's such a radical change from what the world was a couple of weeks ago. It's
hard to wrap your mind around what to do and how to act when we've never experienced anything like this before.
Yeah, that's right. It's just staggering. I think a month ago, if you'd asked me, you know, whether it was any chance of the government in my country passing laws that required people to stay at home except for the four approved reasons, I would struggle to think of any scenario where that could happen without mass protest. Here we are, and if I, you know, see people outside, maybe I'll even report them to the government. It's just incredible how quickly, you know, once your survival's at stake, then it changes everything.
It really does. It does. I loved your blog post you wrote on your website, How to Promote Your Book During a Pandemic. How's that been working out for you so far? You've been following your rules?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough.
It sucks, man. We were going to come and see you coming to Denver, man. We were going to come out and see you at the Tattered Cover here. Right. Oh, so disappointing.
Yeah. It's a great store. Yeah, that would have been lovely. But yeah, look, I'm fine, like, compared to most people. I really feel for, say, an author who is just starting out and relies on that book tour to get that initial awareness about their book. That's much tougher. And there are so many people, probably in your country as well as mine, who have suddenly lost their job and don't know what their future is going to look like. So, yeah, a canceled book tour is not the end of the world.
Right. But, as someone who's used to working from home in their pajama bottoms or whatever it is you wear when you write, what advice do you have for those of us who suddenly find themselves in that same position? I'm a teacher myself, so we're going to start some distance learning here next week.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no. Well, good luck with that. Yeah, I've seen my kids do it. They're on vacation time now, but it's or holidays time. They were doing the online learning thing for 1 week before the lockdown. Uh-huh. Well, actually, not the lockdown itself, but they had this week of trying to do it all online. And the schools did a tremendous job, but boy, like, my wife is a teacher librarian, so not a classroom teacher, but she spends, you know, a fair bit of time with kids. And I have seen how difficult that job is. And to try to do it online and to get everything working so quickly, it's just it boggles my mind. Tips for working from home.
Yes, like, please.
I think that a few people, possibly not teachers, who are, I'm sure, working harder than ever, but some people are discovering how, if you don't have to commute an hour and a half in your day, which is pretty amazing. So I've benefited for a long time from having the commute of just being able to walk up the stairs and get to work. And whenever someone is saying, you know, how did you have time to do this and that, I always think that, man, that commute is really helpful. The commute up the stairs.
That's true.
So yeah, there's that. I've been doing this for quite a while, as you say, and I just find that it's really hard to leave as well. Like, I could never go back to a situation where I had to drive somewhere,
right,
and have meetings with people. I guess you have to have meetings online if you're working from home as well. But I got really intolerant of any kind of inefficiency in my day, because I'm the master of my own domain here and I get to set the schedule of my day. And right. If anything gets in the way of that, I just, you know, the slightest thing, if I have to meet someone for a coffee, you know, a publishing person or whatever, I can't believe how it takes 45 minutes to get there. And then there's just so much mucking around. It just seems incredibly inefficient. So the good thing about working from home is you do get a bit more control over how you structure your day, and you can actually spend a little more time doing things the way you want, I think, than the way that other people do. Look, getting out of the house, if you are allowed to, for your mandated exercise period or whatever, while maintaining correct social distancing from people, is really good too, because otherwise, at least, find myself hunched over the keyboard in like this bent position that just can't be any good for me.
That's true. You got to get outside. I'm a big runner myself. So even when I'm, you know, at school, I get out during the day to get a run in. And I mean, that's great for. Oh, really? Oh, very good. Excellent.
Yeah. The running has kept me sane for sure. I have a dog now, a Labrador. So I take her running in the morning and she's good fun as well. So yeah, just because, you know, working from home is just so sedentary. You could really turn into a lump if you don't make yourself get out there. So yeah, I do think that running is tremendous. It's like the first 3 weeks or 4 weeks, it's just incredible pain of dragging yourself around. And then you reach this point where you realize that you've been running for the last few minutes without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. Yeah.
Do you do any racing, or do you just like to run for the endorphins?
Yeah, just the second one. Yeah, I have done two marathons. Which,
oh, very good.
I was going to do one. I'd heard that once you run a marathon that you get the bug and you always want to do more.
Yeah.
And that was not the case for me. I did a marathon. I dragged myself across the line in 4.5 hours and was like, I'm never doing that again. But my wife wanted to do a marathon after I did one, so I had to keep her company. So I did a second one. That was, I mean, it's something to tick off the bucket list. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to do another one. So mostly, yeah, it's just me sort of cruising around at a fairly gentle pace for, 5 or 6 miles in a morning.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that happened to me. I ran one, and then I was like, now I'm 20 marathons later, still waiting for the next one. So,
wow.
You know, it's good to get out there.
Serious.
Yeah. Now, listen, I loved your book, Providence. It was so good. And speaking of things that, taking your mind off of what's going around, when I was reading your book, I just lost myself in the outer space and the world that you create of, just a great world you created. And like when I would set it down to go into the kitchen to get something to drink or whatever and got out of that world, it really took my breath away for a second. I just really wanted to get back into this world you created. This, oddly enough, now, your book, Providence, in which four people are trapped inside a small confined space for an unspecified amount of time, battling an enemy that keeps coming at you, uncannily reflects the current state of affairs around the world right now. So, I guess kudos for being so prescient without perhaps even meaning to.
Yeah, crazy. It's kind of funny how that came out, too. Yeah, I do think that one of the... if you can find a silver lining in the current horrible situation that the world finds itself, it's that at least the enemy this time is something that's not human. We're not fighting each other this time,
mm-hmm.
where we have to actually work together on the same side because the threat is the something else. And there is, a parallel there between the sort of classic humans versus aliens type story. So, I do like that. There are a few parallels. The isolation thing is something that I probably wrote about because I'm quite familiar with it as a writer myself. Mm. That's something that some people in particular are really finding now. Like it's very different for those of us who are isolating with our families to people who are isolating by themselves or in much smaller numbers. It's going to be really quite traumatic, I think, for some of those people.
I think so.
And there are people like myself who could probably quite happily spend a lot of time with nothing but themselves and a computer, as long as I have an internet connection. That's, I need that.
Let's not go crazy here, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have your bare minimum. But for some people, that's, it's just so alien, no pun intended to them.
Oh, I like what you did there. I like what you did there.
Yeah, environment. Yeah. So, it will be testing.
It will be. I wonder, I'd be curious to see what the divorce rate looks like a year from now, but let's not.
I know. Because this too is like we're in the early period of the lockdown where it's all kind of new and exciting, at least to some degree.
Right.
A month from now, we are going to be hitting each other with hammers.
Yeah, so far I got a family myself, and it's all good. It's all good so far, but who knows? Who knows where this path will take us? But listen, what inspired you to write the book, Providence?
Yeah, what inspired it? Probably a teenage years of reading a lot of classic science fiction because I just annihilated those stories as a kid of space and spaceships and people going out there into the unknown and what they might find. So I really loved just that sense of what the future might hold, being this endless sea of possibilities. So I've written a lot of science fiction over my career, but it's always been very grounded science fiction where it's the real world, but there's some twist to it. Like if it's Jennifer Government, then it's the world, but it's ultra capitalist.
Right.
But this is the first time where I've actually gone, there's a spaceship in this and there are aliens in this. I always wanted to tell that kind of story, but I find that as I've got older, especially, I I get more demanding of the kind of books that I read. And for characters in particular, I really find myself that unless the characters are people that I can really believe in and that I feel like I'm making intelligent choices and asking interesting questions, then the book loses me. So for Providence, I finally had an inkling one day of a situation that would let me set the book in this environment that I just, you know, in a very primal level, just think is awesome, but also tell a very personal story and also relate it to a bigger question and a bigger picture. And by that, I mean, without trying to sound too pretentious, the question of what connects us all as individuals and what it means to be individuals within a species. So there was... Yeah, this sort of a locked room environment on a spaceship where there are these four people who can't go anywhere. They're all by themselves. They have a mission that is not quite what they thought it was when they set out. At least that's true for some of them. And then there's the unfolding question of where they are really and what they're facing, like what the nature of their environment really is. So, yeah, it's and for me, there's always got to be some propulsive kind of plot line to the story. I started out as a real plot guy, and I've sort of become more of a character guy as I've got older, but there still needs to be that suspense for me in a book. So
yeah,
when I found the initial situation of these people who are defending Earth all by themselves in this ship that kind of takes care of all the important stuff by itself – and then what can happen from there? That's when it started to click for me.
Yeah, and it, despite the fact that this being a, quote, sci-fi book, it felt very character-driven. And I love the way you have the different multiple viewpoints, so we get to see all the different characters' points of view. And I found you they're incredibly believable and relatable and empathetic. So well done, well done.
Right, thank you. Yeah. A friend of mine said that it felt a bit like a play at times because
there's
almost a single set. And yeah, I think that's true. Like, although I love sci-fi for the feel of it, I guess. I'm not really into the nitty gritty of the technology, and it's not really a hard science book where it's about concepts and about those sorts of concepts. It's much more about the people and then what connects them and what it means for us as a wider species. So yeah, it's got to be about people for me. I think whatever story it is, whether I'm writing a science fiction novel or a comedy or whatever comes next, it's got to start with interesting people.
Well, not only interesting people, but you got to give them an interesting enemy. And I absolutely love the aliens you created for this book. You call them salamanders, these six-legged beasts that hawk loogies that'll implode matter. They actually reminded me of some students I've had in the past. Did you have like a murderer's row of monsters you created and then whittled it down to these salamanders, or did they just jump right off at you? What were you looking for in your adversary?
Right. I did not start with them as they were. At first I had the conflict and I wasn't sure what the enemy was actually going to be or whether it was going to be alien at all. But as I evolved the story and I found, basically what I do is I start throwing words at a page and then I'll write a whole bunch of different scenes and then I will find that 80% of them are just not that interesting. So I'll throw them out and dig into what makes the remainder actually interesting and then expand on that.
Sure.
So this is also one of the reasons it takes me so long to write a book, because I cut out so much and I backtrack and backtrack. But I found that what was the most interesting part of the book for me was these four people in the situation, and the enemy that they're facing is largely unknown. So we know that they're some sort of alien species and they're tremendously aggressive for reasons that are not immediately clear. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that the people in the book project their own ideas onto the aliens. So for some of them, it doesn't really matter that the enemies are hostile. We have to win this war or else it's the end of us as a species. So end of the discussion. And for others, it's a bit more nuanced than that. And they need to understand exactly, what's happening and why. So, and that's the same dynamic that is reflected in the character's relationship with the ship they're on as well, because the ship is run by this artificial intelligence that doesn't speak, doesn't really interact with them at all, but it does make most of the important decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, it does say hello. And other
it
things.
Does it does arguably right. say hello.
It did the, say hello. Come on,
according to one character. Yes,
right.
Yeah. So it's I'd find that in that situation the characters are revealing by what they suggest is true about the salamanders and what they suggest is true about the ship. So mm-hmm. we learn about who these people are by what they think these other mysterious creatures are as well.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking of that artificial intelligence. You know, your Intel character, Gilly, he spends a lot of time trying to think like the artificial intelligence, which is kind of ironic. But are you Max Barry, Max with one X, by the way? Well, I had to ask you yes. about that later. But Max, yes. are you just sitting around waiting for the day when AI dooms us all?
Yeah, well, that's a good question because I kind of am. I don't have a real doomsday outlook on it, but I do think that it's tremendously dangerous in the sense that it's again, not to get back to the virus too much, but it's the same sort of idea where with the computer it can run away from you really quickly before you realize it.
Yeah.
And I am the sort of guy who, like, I've been a hobbyist programmer my whole life. I started tinkering around with a computer when I was probably 9 years old. And one thing you learn when you do programming is that how it works is you tell the computer what you want it to do, and then the computer does something different. And then you realize that actually it was doing exactly what you told it to do, but you just weren't clear enough in what you said, or you had assumed that it would understand something that it didn't. So it's it has this, I guess personality is a good enough word for it, but obviously it's not really an aware personality. It's this very mindless personality. But it's this thing that can just execute a command 10 million times because it never would have entered its head to think that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe that's not sensible. So I think that, yeah, that's probably the danger where we keep doing amazing things with artificial intelligence and it keeps getting better and better. And then one day we look back and realize that 2 months ago, we probably should have stopped it from doing this thing that it's now doing 10 million times over. And, you know, whether that's producing cans of beans or whatever, an artificial intelligence, you know, once it gets its head to do something, could be really hard to stop. So, it's interesting because it has that duality of tremendous possibility, but also a mysterious danger in the sense that we can't really be sure what will happen. Like, the question is where it will stop. And as usually happens with technology, like, technology doesn't stop. It just keeps evolving in more and more ways. And it's people who realize that, oh, okay, the technology is here to stay, so we'll just get used to it. So yeah, AI is amazing. It will change the future. And at some point there will probably be a terrible reckoning, but I'm not sure when that will be.
If you had an opportunity to get on the spaceship for 2 years, and let's say you didn't, you know, take your family out of the equation, would you sign up for that?
Wow. I think I would do better than most people because I have been on my own spaceship for
that's true.
20 years yeah. or so writing uh-huh. novels. And I've been quite happy doing that. So yeah, I'm definitely not the sort of person who needs to phone a friend every day or two to just right. to connect socially. So yeah, I would be most like Gilly out of all of these characters where, yeah, if it's just, you know, me doing my own thing, that's perfectly fine. It's really different in the book because they don't have the possibility of coming home early. They are just out there.
Right.
So it's, and they've been, they question themselves during the story about whether they really should have decided to do the thing that they were doing. They did it because the service, the military service was looking for the best of the best, and it was what everyone on Earth was attempting to do to qualify for this thing. And then the four people who actually make it realize that maybe what they qualified for was not exactly what they thought. So it's a thing that they have to work through as the crew on the ship as to what they've left behind. I think even the most introverted of us, after some length of time, would start to, like one of the characters in the book, who would start to lose it a little bit because, yeah. yeah, it's it's a strange thing. When you're by yourself, your mind can go to strange places. And I find that as an author, the just being by yourself all the time and in your own head, you know, it's fun, but it's not all that healthy either. Like no, occasionally, it's actually good to get some stability back into my own thoughts. Like just get a perspective on what I was thinking from another human being now and again. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, you mentioned earlier some sci-fi books and authors you were reading growing up that influenced you. Who were those authors?
Oh boy, I read a lot of, I really enjoyed the classics. Probably Philip K. Dick was the most influential because he's got the that combination of really clear and exciting big sci-fi concepts. Like every short story will be, you know, there'll be some war against an alien race, or there'll be some robot or some colonization of a planet or something. But they're also stories that are really well populated by breathing, living characters. And they delve into questions that I am also really interested in about persuasion and about perception, which are sort of two concepts that I keep coming back to in book after book, where I'm interested in that gap between what we perceive and what is real, and how we each carry around our own perceptions, and also how people can be persuaded from one thing to another. So yeah, that was tremendously influential. Arthur C. Clarke, I read a ton of that. John Christopher, the Tripods trilogy, which is a really great young adult series about humans sort of interacting with an alien culture that is at first very mysterious. Like you don't know who the aliens are in the Tripods for quite a long time in the book. Margaret Atwood, Oryx and It was just a dystopian. Yeah, that's sort of, again, just like really, really interesting. Sort of, that's more like your apocalyptic science fiction. But yeah, just I really enjoyed all of that science fiction. I tend to read the older stuff more than the newer stuff just because I love that almost that 1950s, 60s, like retro future.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Like sometimes in their Philip K. Dick books, the robots explode and there's like gears and oil and it's almost cyberpunk.
That's fun.
So yeah, before things became super complicated with virtual reality and everything that happens now and germ sequencing and all of this stuff in the modern sci-fi. But it's just a theme that I think is baked into my brain because I read so much of it as a kid. So it's something that always has that appeal to me.
Did you, were you always interested in being a writer?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I used to write stories in my recess break in elementary school.
Oh, really?
I just really enjoyed it. Cool. I wanted to be a writer my whole life. I didn't think that it was going to be something I would be able to do because, you know, it's not the easiest thing to make a living out of. In high school, I used to write short stories and discovered that if I wrote short stories about my friends and put them in the story, then people actually were interested in reading about it. So, and then I basically just wrote novels in my spare time when I worked for my real job as a salesperson for Hewlett-Packard, the computer company. Mm. And then got lucky earlier than I expected where I actually managed to quit my real job and work full time, which I've been doing for about 20 years now.
Congratulations. Yeah, just, that's awesome.
Yeah, living the dream basically.
Yeah.
Something I'm tremendously grateful for.
That's great. And what did happen to that extra X? Because I got your book and I was like, I was looking at the cover and I'm like, something doesn't look right. And then, because I read your book, Syrup, many, many years ago. I don't know how many years ago, but I enjoyed that book. And I thought there was another X. And then I looked at I was looking at your website. Talk to me about that other X.
Yes. So I want to be really clear on the record here. The extra X was always just a joke for that first novel because the book was about marketing and the characters in the book, they name themselves like Six and Sneaky Pete and Scat. So I just thought it would be really funny if I put an extra X on my name. So I would be like these pretentious marketing twerps. It didn't really occur to me until I saw the book on the shelf that – you know, when people see it for the first time, they've got no way of getting the joke.
No, it's your first book. How would they know?
Yeah, that's right. It seems so obvious in retrospect. So I did always intend to drop the extra X. I'm not sure if you go to maxbarry.com with two X's, I'm not sure if I let the domain lapse or not, but yeah, that used to redirect for a while.
Oh, that's funny. That is very cool. All right, man. Well, listen, Max, I loved your book. I really, really enjoyed it. So good. I'm recommending it to everybody. It's a space book that doesn't read like a space book. It's character driven. It'll just take you out of this pandemic world where they're in right now. And really appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dave.
You got it, Max. Take care.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. The Inside Chat. That was my chats with Max Barry.
Very good.
A great guy. Really, really nice
guy. Loved it. I can't wait to read the book.
And so engaging and interesting fella and a great book. So there you go. There's our episode for our midweek Inside Chat. Thank you guys for listening. Look for a new episode this weekend with more book recommendations and another interview for you as well. So do us a favor, check us out on our website, theinsideflap.com. Support IndieBound by clicking on our link there. IndieBound is a collection of independent bookstores, and you know, it's really important to support them in this time. And please, please, please keep supporting us. You know, it'd be great. We appreciate you listening to us. Check us out on social media at The Inside Flap, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. My name is Dave Medicus. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you later on.
Hang in there.
Maybe I'll even report them to the government.